Okay, so we have one more event today, the last panel, which is titled The Future of DNS Security. Being forgetful humans, we need to have ways of remembering where information is on the internet. You know, the large collection of data doesn't do you any good if you can't find it. So you need directory systems to locate that information. DNS is basically what enables the internet to run. And consequently, you need to make sure that that is not a point of vulnerability. One of our panelists, unfortunately, due to personal problems, could not make it today, Paul Vixey. We have Eric Hughes filling in at the last minute. Thank you, Eric. And I'm going to give them a couple more minutes to get the chair set up.
They are taking the accordion away, right? We don't have to play that, right?
Well, actually, if you guys don't need more time, we could have a... I think there's... Thank you, Rodney. I think there's call for a little accordion music. Yeah. I think we can pass on the accordion music now.
By the way, I'd like to dedicate this to everybody here, and especially the organizers.
We've come a long, long way together, through the hard times and the good. I have to celebrate you, baby.
Thank you.
Very nice. Now, Brandon Wiley.
I have a prize to give away to the. We're going to show you the prize. Right, this is a poster. To the first person who can name the name of the first panel on the first day. Just, you know, somebody. Oh. Who? It was Idol. Right there. Okay, well, come down, get your poster.
The first panel.
Oh. Oh, I said first panel. I'm sorry. You're right. I messed up the question.
The prize, of course, is the EFF poster commemorating the Bernstein case victory.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brandon Wiley. I'm the co-founder of the Freenet Project, although I'm not with the Freenet Project anymore. I'm with the Tristero Project now. And I'll let everybody else just introduce themselves, and then we'll start the panel.
I'm Eric Hughes. I started Cypherpunks.
I'm Philip Palenbaker, principal scientist of VeriSign.
Hey, be nice.
Be nice. Now he volunteered to show up. He did, really. You know, and we made sure they check at the door for no vegetables available. Anyway, I'm Rodney Thayer. I'm a consultant. I do security architecture things and, among other things, work on DNSSEC and IPSEC and TLS and evil things like that.
So I'm going to open up the discussion with a story from my own perspective about DNS. I had this little side project for a while called the Everything Over Freenet Project, where we were just implementing everything over Freenet email, IRC, because it was fun. There's no real point to it. And we were going to do DNS over Freenet, because, hey, Why not? Everybody likes DNS. And
no.
The person that was trying to implement DNS over Freenet, he froke out. He quit the project because he bumped into some fundamental problems with distributed trusted namespaces.
Excuse me, he froke out. That's the past tense of he freaked out.
Yeah, to when one freaks, one is considered to have froke out. So anyway, so he had this problem that he wanted it so that it was anonymous. Anybody could just, you know, update their names. It had to be totally decentralized with no kind of even central authority or anything. And he had this problem that he couldn't find any way to reconcile the two things. And I think that's because they're not reconcilable. And you have to choose. Do you want it to be anonymous with no authority, or do you want to have some kind of authority structure? And that's a fundamental problem. And so I think that we should just kind of talk about what are the fundamental problems in distributed, trusted naming of things, and what are the solutions that people are actually trying to get out right now, and what are the problems with those solutions? So somebody go.
I get to start. What do you mean I get to start? I already talked with the microphone. Don't you get to start? So DNS. So the two things you have to say to start a conversation about security in DNS is that there's this protocol, DNSSEC, which a lot of people think really sucks bad. On the other hand, securing directories is something that lots of people think is a good idea. And those two things are you know, hard problems, especially when you have to mention them together. So now that we've got the interesting comments out of the way. Why does it have to be centralized? You know, just because he works for a company that happens to run COM, you know, I might work for a company that runs .qq or something like that. I don't know if there's an ISO country code for that. So what do you mean it's centralized? I mean, the fact that we're all lazy and we all got domains in .com doesn't mean that the whole system is centralized. I think how the world is using it today does not necessarily match sort of what the technology and the solution does.
Although there's a fundamental problem with not using the top-down hierarchical DNS structure, which is that if everyone's registering with different people, then you may not be able to resolve names that other people can resolve, and you have limited visibility. You don't have a global namespace.
What you're really describing here is a protocol called CNRP, Common Name Resolution Protocol, where these issues have actually been addressed in that the problem with DNS is that kind of like fundamental to the DNS architecture is there is only one Amazon.com. And this kind of works if what you're doing is giving somebody kind of telephone numbers, in that that's what a DNS address is. Okay, it maps onto an IP address that happens to be numeric, but really it's a telephone number. And just the same as you have in the telephone infrastructure. You know, your telephone number is not what routes your telephone call. There's this SS7 layer of signaling, and it's the SS7 identifier that actually your telephone call is being routed to. Same thing. So CNRP, you can do things like having two Amazons. So there's the Amazon the bookseller and the Amazon that small forest in, is it Latin America somewhere? Where Dan Quayle didn't say they speak Latin yet. Shall I give the mic on to Eric, who hasn't said anything?
Global uniqueness is evil. I wrote a paper a year and a half ago for the Asilomar Microcomputer Workshop called The Autonomist, the paper's called The Autonomist, and I have it in PDF format. It's not up on the web, although I can make it available if someone wants to publish it. Basically, the argument I make is that the essential problem with DNS is structural, not technological. It comes from the fact that there is such a thing as ICANN, that the policy of DNS is to create global uniqueness. Global uniqueness always requires an enforcement infrastructure, and an enforcement infrastructure can always be abused. Therefore, if you're going to seriously fix the problem, you need to deal with the problem of duplication. Now, CNRP is one aspect of this. My own personal belief is that there cannot be a single solution to the problem of duplication because different social groups resolve duplication in different manners. In particular, this was a topic at CFP about a year and a half ago. I was talking to one of the fellows I've forgotten the guy's name, who was running the workshop. That workshop foundered It was completely unproductive, as it turns out. And it foundered on the claim that trademark owners should have a say in the use of the name system to resolve uniqueness. Well, I have a very brief statement for that. Fuck that. Now, Mr. Holland Baker here, who works for a company that is going to get sued, he can worry about that. If we're designing a new system, we don't need to worry about that. I mean, there's more to say. We'll say it later.
So if I want to go buy books on the internet from some company that sells books on the internet, which in some circles is known as Amazon, how would you solve that in an environment where you don't have central sort of regulation of that?
Who said Google? Raise your hand. I want to congratulate you, because that's exactly the right answer. But the point is that certain kinds of public knowledge are the way that you do real disambiguation. Now, let me talk a bit about the history of trademark. I mean, this is not the legal panel, but I've looked into this a little bit. Trademark registration is actually a reification of an old common law principle of unjust enrichment and trade dilution, which is to say that it used to be that you could, if you were a small web, say like you were a small internet company that like sold widgets that weren't, sold ISP connectivity, you could call yourselves Amazon, and there would be no actual problem with distinguishing the Amazon that sold one thing from the Amazon that sold the other thing. What happened is that there was a federalized version of this stuff that got created to register trademarks to make the adjudication of who had what name and in what sector of commerce easier. Us computer people said, oh, look, there's a global database. That means that our technical problem is easier. But the technical problem being easier makes the politics harder. Okay? So there's no actual need to worry about implementing uniqueness in the technology. What you do need is you do need a way of people who are actually trying to do, trying to sell books as Amazon, who is not the Amazon.com that Jeff Bezos founded. You need a way of getting at those people, but you don't need to do a priori things. I mean, that's prior restraint. It's against the spirit of the First Amendment.
Yeah, I'm getting the feeling I'm...
Bracketed.
Bracketed, yes.
We put you in the middle on purpose.
Yeah, I mean, like, first of all, before we sort of, like, continue to thrash on the political, I'd just like to say a few words about DNS security and why it is a goodish sort of thing, but it isn't sort of like the solution to world hunger. I don't think it's going to cure AIDS, and it certainly isn't the security for every internet security problem.
What problem does it solve?
Okay. DNS security, DNS security is providing security for the DNS system. It's not trying to do anything else, although there are people who are kind of like saying, oh, we're going to have secure DNS. Ah, that's going to be the global PKI we've been looking for. And it's kind of like scary that, because I mean like, okay, yes, if I'm going to Amazon.com, yeah, it's good to be going to the real Amazon.com, saying for CNN.com. However, if I'm going to
Thayer.kk.
What, in every 158 countries?
Yes, actually, one of my projects is with Rodney dot fill in top level domain.
We've got a solution for you, actually.
I know. Domain name search. I get your spam paper mail all the time.
Yeah. I mean, the problem that you will have with DNSSEC is, okay, you've got a secure binding from an internet name, DNS name, to an IP address. Well, that's great. I mean, like, I just don't give out my credit card number to everybody just because I know their name. And knowing their DNS name isn't going to be sufficient either. So what we're going to have is a secure way of doing DNS lookups, but it's not going to address anything beyond that. It's certainly not going to address the issue of, is this somebody who I want to give my credit card number to, my personal data, or any of the other things that you might want to do in a commercial relationship.
And when are we going to have this secure DNS?
These specifications are in front of the IETF, and some of us are trying to persuade the DNSX working group that it would be a good thing if they were deployable in the dot-com zone.
So the answer is no one knows at the moment?
The code's in bind 9. There are people trying to do DNSSEC in some environments. Other environments, it's complicated. So, you know, dot-com, it's complicated. You know, dot-mil, you know, somebody's running it, and they said, you will do this. And, you know, they're busy striving to build it. At least they're spending money on building it, which is, of course, not exactly the same thing, but that's the military. So I guess I would observe a difference in views here that if, say for the sake of argument, that Amazon is the generic name for a bookstore that sells on the Internet, I think Eric's view is that if I want to go to the Amazon that's in San Francisco, I want to go to the local one, and the fact that somebody up in Seattle has that name should not interfere with me being able to identify those people. And then the other view is that the entire Internet is one small village, and so the fact that there's an Amazon in one place is an Amazon everywhere. And I said it wrong, obviously.
No. Just, I actually didn't get to that point yet. I need to get this paper up on the web so people can read it. My actual opinion is that you should corral the existing DNS into its own little thing and let it exist as one of many ways of doing name resolution. There is a place, particularly for large businesses, to like go have a unique name. But, you know, to require everyone else to use those unique names and to force everyone through a system that's useful for commercial purposes only, that's not a good thing.
Well, absolutely, and just to pick up on what Eric's saying, you know, it'd be pretty good at the same time if you can fix the things like internationalization, which is fixed in the DNS spec. You know, we have internationalized version of DNS.
You know, internationalization doesn't really revolve around security, so that's kind of off topic.
But the point is that this is what people are asking DNS to do, and there's a whole catalog of things that, you know, DNS does one group of things really well.
And, you know, there are alternative, you know, DNS hierarchies. It's just that no one uses them, which does anyone have any opinion on why those don't ever take off?
I ran a top-level domain on my home machine in 1993. I ran the .cp cypherpunks domain. I ran it using a standard bind distribution, and in order to, you had to basically download the whole zone in order to resolve names, because bind is not configured to do root name service easily. That's not really the point. The real issue is the following. We have two issues here that are conflated. One is the security of a particular model for doing name resolution is embodied in the acronym DNS as it is today. And it's clear that that's a legacy system which is going to be around for at least another 20 or 30 years. Like 20 or 30 years, some of us will be dead before DNS gets supplanted
by... You're talking about the DNS model of name resolution?
The DNS model of name resolution.
Well, I think that could last forever. I mean, that's a way of doing name resolution.
I'm saying at least it's 20 or 30 years, right? I mean, like, more than you want to... Like, don't even think that it's going to disappear in the, like, foreseeable planning horizon. The second question is, does the security of any model of name resolution actually do what you want it to? Which is a question of selection of DNS versus other things that haven't actually been developed yet. The DNS model is only securable for certain kinds of things. It's not securable for other kinds of things because of its political model.
So the point here is there is no law of the universe that says you have to use DNS to do name to number lookup.
That's right.
You could use signed XML. You could use PGP messages. You could use pieces of sticky paper. We can all go back to host files. There are still fragments around the Internet. The host file get up to 500K or something. And, yeah.
I absolutely adore host files for peer-to-peer work, because you can put the host file in with who your friends are. It's the, okay, I'm not brandishing a weapon here, but it's the terrorist cell model of security. And I mean that utterly, utterly.
No, it's the compartmentalized security model. You have to use the marketing term.
Notably, peer-to-peer systems are tending to kind of stray away from DNS, except they still use them for initial introduction because initial introduction is very tricky, but Freenet, for instance, in the newer version they're working on a crazy Freenet DNS replacement for inner Freenet stuff. I'm not going to talk about that, but just they're going that way.
I think there's a great opportunity in the P2P crowd to do alternate DNS resolution models. I was trying to figure out how to do this last summer. It's I'll just forewarn you, it's an extraordinarily hard problem. You've got to worry about how essentially any useful piece of software has got to have a smooth transition between DNS resolution and other forms of resolution. Either that or it's like completely off in its own world. Ideal, like take web browsing. It would be nice if you had peer-to-peer web browsing, whatever that actually means in practice. You want to be able to have it relatively seamless between DNS resolution and whatever the alternate resolution is. It turns out in practice that you get into the nitty-gritty, it's really hard. I mean, I'd welcome people that want to work on this. I'm perfectly willing to talk. It's a new kind of thing that can be done.
If you're trying to fly this in the real world, wouldn't you end up with a situation where you get back to the point where you have big businesses and large infrastructures and they all sort of coalesce around some central thing again, whether it's DNS or not, and then wouldn't you reinvent the same problems?
I hope so. All right, one of the premises here seems to be that Eric's thinking, we'll make sure that two people can have the same name, and any number of people can have the same name. I'm thinking, hey, that's a much better business model for me.
Well, let me distinguish between two things, because there's the fact of concentration and there's the requirement of concentration. Right now, de facto on the internet, there's a requirement of concentration of the DNS into the sort of standard.com and related hierarchies. What I want to, in practice, and let's be real clear about this, in practice, most of the stuff is going to end up concentrated like that for purely economic reasons, right? But if there's a technical requirement that you have to go through that, that's where the abuse of politics comes in. You want to get rid of the requirement that people have to use the DNS for applications that don't need it or for some reason want to avoid it.
So you want to make sure that you're saying it would be a good thing if, to get specific here, this is CodeCon, right? I can talk about code, right? Protocol stacks, it would be a good thing if protocol stacks were capable of using multiple resolvers. They might have one which went through DNS, they might have another one which went through some other mechanism, and then you could choose your path to find your name.
Yeah, here's my actual, I actually have a concrete proposal. It's on one slide in this talk. I need to get this talk up. I propose appending the letters, period, all caps, ICANN, to every DNS name, right? Okay? And the reason to do that is, maybe two dots, but some syntactic representation that the rest of the name is under the political jurisdiction of ICANN, right? And now what you do is you simply have local resolution of what ICANN is. And you can say, like, if you want to create .Bianca, like whatever, whoever your local source of authority is for alternate resolutions, you can integrate like that. And so the answer is, yeah, I think you can. I think you do want to support multiple resolvers. And you need some way of syntactically disambiguating them for the larger stuff. Incidentally, I also think that all .com, .net, and .org should have .us appended to them and get rid of international country code.
Just a question. How many people in the audience are aware of what real names do? And how many people think that many people know what real name... Yeah. When the average person is typing in a name into Microsoft Internet Explorer and it goes via the real names resolution path, how many people do you think know what is going on there and how that name's being registered? What are the criteria? Well, yes, the shareholders of real names.
I'm going to take Dan's question because he's been raising his hand for a long time. I'm sorry, Lucky.
Dan, come up here.
What? No, Dan gets to go first. But you can go next.
Start a queue.
Okay.
You're organized, Dan, for anarchists. We can start a queue.
Eric, you're sitting up. You're standing now. But, no, you are Eric. You are not Barney the Purple Dinosaur. You have been talking about DNS. You have not been talking about the nature of fluorescent lighting. We are both sitting here in the DNA lounge. We have met here together. It doesn't matter whether I think I'm not and you think you're not. There is a global truth to the statement we are standing here in the DNA lounge. And it seems to me like when you were talking about denying, why can't I have my Amazon.com and you have your Amazon.com, it seems to me like you're denying the psychological construct of a global truth. And while postmodernists and academia might want to deny this, the reality is there is a truth. And it seems to me, I bet you have a 2048-bit PGP key and you export the public element because you know nobody's going to be able to generate the private part of that but for technical reasons to spoof your global uniqueness.
So what you're saying here is you endorse Habermas's intersubjective interpretation of names.
I endorsed realities of psychology and of the human mind, and I'm wondering how you guys can.
No, Len, let Dan have the microphone, because this is going to get fun.
It seems to me that I was about to say something very similar. Eric's talking about how there isn't uniqueness, and then he says, well, we should put a dot ICANN after it. Well, he's talking about uniqueness. He's just talking about abstracting it further.
Okay, let me be really clear. I believe that non-human readable names can and should be made unique for a bunch of reasons. Like, I mean, I'm dating myself, but in 94 at DEF CON, I gave a talk called the Universal Information Piracy Network, which was essentially a technique that's being used by a lot of people here today, which is the separation of metadata about canonical hash values from the hash values which represent the large blobs which are stored elsewhere. Those hash functions are excellent unique identifiers exactly for the cryptographic reasons. Public keys are excellent technical identifiers for exactly those reasons. The system that's useful is to take something that has non-uniqueness in human readability and maps it to, disambiguates to, unique things that are cryptographic in nature and sort of like essentially unique by their construction.
Well, back to the bookstore analogy, though. What if I'm the consumer surfing the web and I want to know about the Amazon that's in Washington, and I want to go to that. How do I know that I'm getting that Amazon.com?
Okay, if you choose to participate in a system that does, if you want the safety of commerce, go to VeriSign, get a .com, buy uniqueness, right? I'm completely serious about that. If you feel that you have a commercial reason to require uniqueness, go purchase a uniqueness service, right? It works just fine. Now, to answer, let me talk about the other question about facts, okay? I'll tell you, there's a guy named Eric Hughes who used to work at Wells Fargo who did computer security for them. I remember this. I was reminded of this recently because I've been talking to a friend of mine at Wells Fargo about doing some work for them, and I like sent them over and he goes, isn't this the guy who used to work for us? And he's just like, no, this is the other Eric Hughes. The The other amusing version of this is that at one point in 1994, I got a slew of phone calls from sports writers wondering about the Cal basketball team. It turns out that the new coach of the Cal basketball team was named Eric Hughes. It was easy to disambiguate. He didn't live in Berkeley, and I'm not black.
Well, wait, Eric, so you're saying people are expecting there to be uniqueness. That is a presumption, and there were bugs in their presumptions, and it caused errors, but the assumption was there, wasn't it?
There's a presumption of uniqueness in the DNS because it was constructed that way. The points about the presumptions about uniqueness... No, the presumptions about uniqueness or non-uniqueness need to be made visible in the namespace.
Of course, there's a solution to Eric's problem. He could always go for a double-barreled surname. You know, a hierarchical name. I mean, like, you know, we could have this system where everybody registers their name at birth.
Are you married, Phil?
Yes.
Do you have kids?
Yes.
Do they have four names?
They have unique names. Globally unique.
Actually, I have a son who has four names, and I had a 20-minute fight, which almost turned physical, with the nurse in the delivery room who told me you couldn't write four names on a birth certificate. Now, mind you, I lived in the United States, and this was in the last century, and so people have, you know, names from other countries where they have 800,000 characters in the name. So my simple little English name of Lucas Avery Grimes there, you think, would fit. But anyway, they said, oh, no, you can't have four names. So there are people trying to enforce these things.
Our moderator wants to speak. Let him.
So this you know, brings up a problem with this idea of, okay, let's just have multiple registrars and let's just, multiple server domain name hierarchies, and then we'll just put the name of the domain name hierarchy in the name so that instead of having Amazon.com, you have Amazon.com.icann, you have Amazon.com.brandonsdnsservice, et cetera. Well, the problem is that then you just push the name resolution problem to another level. Instead of having a name, you have a DNS path, and then you end up with this thing where you get four, five, six, seven level names because you need to look up the name and then. So, you know, it ends up being amazon.com.brandonsdnsserver.icann, and then I don't want to, you know, go to ICANN, so it's, you know, I add another thing, and then the names get very long, and it just becomes pointless.
No one said it would be easy.
Ready for another question?
Yeah.
Of course, given the nature of the discussion, I can't help but make a comment as well, though I do have a very concrete question here, and that is, while I agree with Eric's findings of shortcomings in DNS, I don't understand where the problem lies. You're certainly free to build any resolvers using any algorithms and any heuristics that you so choose, so I don't really see the problem. Having said that, I have a very specific question for Phil. Given that DNSSEC is one of the topics of this panel, and that's as follows. I seem to recall and certainly have been told by those close to the project that in the early DNSSEC days of Trust Information Systems DNS, way back in 94, 95, maybe 96, key pairs were generated for the GTLDs, in particular .com, for DNSSEC purposes. My question to you, Phil, is can you confirm or deny that these key pairs were that key pairs were ever generated for .com, and if so, where are these key pairs now? Thank you.
When did you last see your father? Yes. I am not aware of any key pairs existing. If they were generated in those days, right, certainly no public key components have been distributed. So if no public key has been distributed, well, what is it to bind that to DNS as opposed to any other random public key? And I'm not sure at this point whether there'd be a tremendous interest in a bunch of keys that were generated. Yeah. If they were generated in secure hardware, they'd be in a BBN safekeeper box. And I can assure you that the fewer of those end up in my data center, the happier I am.
Sounds like they're probably gathering dust now, and if we're going to be using DNSSEC, it would be better to generate new keys.
Well, actually, they'd probably be doing worse than that because the safekeeper box battery go after a while if you don't plug them in. So,
in response to this and in question sort of to this whole thing about just extending the namespace, that I think isn't useful because it's just like getting longer names right now until they're not memorable anymore. I do agree with you that, you know, in a world with, you know, 6 billion plus people, a flat namespace doesn't really work. But the question is, why can't you just do it by having a namespace with collisions? And if you want authenticity, you can go to somebody like VeriSign, and you don't have to go to VeriSign somebody by a com. You can just buy a signature, and people can decide locally whose signatures to go to. And the other resolution you can do when you're deciding between signatures is, I don't know how many people have read the pet names paper. But that's a good sort of solution to this kind of thing, where when you have a collision, how to do local resolution.
The thing about multiple levels of hierarchy, you think about Yellow Cab. Yellow Cab, as I understand it, is not actually owned by any one company. And it's like, I don't care where Yellow Cab of Pocatello, Idaho is. I don't care what their phone number or their IP address or anything. But I might care about the one in San Francisco. So you have a sort of a locality that you run with in the real world. I care about American Airlines because, you know, it doesn't matter if I'm in Scotland or here or Boston or whatever. So there would be both things that have a bigger scope and things that have a local scope. So I believe it could, in fact, work to have multiple top levels where, you know, one is .icann and one is, you know, .local or something like that.
We have that now, don't we? Yellowcab.sf.ca.us.
What this is kind of turning into is, well, why secure DNS? Because, I mean, like, DNS is a crappy idea in the first place. And yes, there are problems, and as I said, I mean, if you believe that there are those problems, then have a look at CNRP and work on ways in which you can help getting that out there. Because, I mean, like, you know, that's work that the VeriSign Applied Research has been doing for, you know, 3 years now and trying to get out.
Well, Phil, we jumped right into how, you know, what's wrong with DNSSEC. We didn't really talk about what's good with it. Do you want to say a few things about that?
Well, first of all, what's good about it? Well, at the moment, there's a big problem in that we're depending upon DNS. People are expecting when they type in CNN.com that they get information from CNN.com. And this can even rise to a national security level in that in the old days of the 1970s and 80s, when there was a coup in a banana republic, what was the first target of the coup?
The TV station.
The TV station. And the sources from which we get information are incredibly important. If somebody was wanting to create a coup in one of these countries, they could probably do it by spoofing CNN, the BBC, and the local news. And they could probably generate the illusion that there had been a coup. And at the moment, well, the sort of places where you're having coups aren't the sort of places that are internet wired. But we're going to be pushing the telephone system into the internet. I mean, that's a collision that's underway at the moment. We're going to be pushing all our communication systems into the internet. So we've got to be careful about when we're using names, knowing that we're getting back the right information. So what DNSSEC does is it simply secures the mapping from those names to those IP addresses. Still got the old bug of you can only sell the same name once. I much prefer Eric's Bordello model. You make the sale, you've still got the product.
I won't ask Phil to elaborate on VeriSign business model preservation protocols. Phil didn't actually answer. .com is hard because you have to sign a zone, which is how many gigabytes now?
41 million entries. I mean, like, this is something that, in terms of actual size, when you see it on the data floor, there are four of those, what's that, EMC data storage thingies. There are four of those just storing the .com zone. If you do DNSSEC according to the current ITF standard, we'd need another 40 EMC storage units. This is kind of bad when you've got a zone that's growing by 50% a month.
My copy of .com doesn't take up an entire EMC storage unit. What takes up so much space? It's 6 gigabytes or something. I mean, it's painful, but it's not that bad.
Well, the problem is that it's not just one copy. It's all the copies, the deltas, and the amount of information we're required to keep is not just the snapshot. It's also the delta, the transition between it. It's a lot.
So audit trails are, okay, so that takes 6 gigabytes, and that gets us up to hundreds of gigabytes, and then you go offline, so why do you have a bunch of EMCs? Anyway, that still doesn't sound like it hangs together to me, but anyway, I've only been doing that kind of stuff for 20 years or so.
No, Phil's not going to talk next.
Okay. On the subject of pet names, which were brought up, I think that pet names are very important because all of the different models of doing distributed name resolution all are actually subsets of pet names. Anything that you can think of, it's pet names with some particular limitations and some particular assumptions. So everyone should read Mark Miller's pet names paper and should also read Zuko's paper on why you have to choose if you want it to be human readable or distributed, or fully distributed, or secure. You have to choose two of those three things. Everyone should read that paper.
Sorry, what? Pet names is short.
Pet names is short. I have only one comment about pet names. There are a number of disambiguation things. We don't know which is going to work best in practice. The right way technically to do this is to add a resolution architecture that you can plug in the things that you're going to try. You know, it's almost certainly they're going to be application specific, and by that I mean human application, not computer application. Let's take the next question.
So Eric was talking about the security implications of the political models you have underlying these things. The biggest problem it seems to be with having VeriSign and the rest of the dot wildcard system we've got now is that that seems to be a single point of failure for most of the internet at the moment. So I wonder if the panel could discuss the security of that, particularly given that maybe a distributed denial of service attack on the DNS system might be effective. And you can be as specific as you want, but bearing in mind that there's a lot of distributed denial of a service knowledge here, so you might not want to give too much away.
I'm just going to say before I let the people talk that as I was saying with the having choose two of the three, that if you get rid of the hierarchical top-down structure of DNS, that you will instantly have some other problems that you're going to have to deal with. There's no win-win situation.
There are two kinds of denial of service attacks. They're political and technical. There's political repression that can happen through the DNS. Right now, those to date have been trademark disputes. There is no a priori reason why that's not going to change. I'll let the other people address the technology ones.
What, you mean somebody might attack the DNS system? To give you a level set, people know about the federal site that I once did some security work on, and they were getting something like 10 attacks an hour. The DNS system is under siege constantly from multiple places. DNS distributed denial of service attacks started on the DNS system. And, I mean, like, the number of people trying to knock that thing over is just amazing. What it comes down to is really, really, really fat pipes. And a large number of them on a large number of IP addresses and a whole load of infrastructure that I wouldn't go into because, I mean, like, at some point with denial of service, it becomes security through obscurity and not wanting to reveal your security plan. But
it also involves not pissing off the entire world.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, you know, there's also the thing of, yes, if we pissed off the entire world, well, they'd probably go and buy their DNS from somewhere else. Yeah, well, the thing is that the feeders in to us would start to die before we'd actually die. I mean, like, yes, you can be on an OC4. You can be on six OC48s, but the people who are feeding you are not necessarily on pipes that fat. Yeah, and they try, and there are probably about eight people trying at this very moment.
We're going to take the next question here.
One last thing. In trying to ask people what their perception of what's the threat against DNS, the response most of the time is network solutions customer service, is that somebody can social their way into getting the domain name hijacked. And in fact, us protecting all the little bits in the wire doesn't actually help. Oh. Right.
So I was wondering if you could comment on the Google effect and the fact that some smart search engines are kind of obviating domain names, at least as like useful identifiers. And if you think this is just something really kind of neat, and if this is actually like a growing phenomenon.
I think it'd be neat if it worked. I'm not sure it works very well. Some of the search engines, you know, you have search engines that pop up. You know, if you pay enough money, you get to the top of the list. The way they read your search query, stuff like that. I think that's a thing that is happening some, but I don't think it's happening as much as you might expect because the amount of sort of the noise you get when you look for a signal there, I don't think is that great.
I think that you're right in terms of discovery. In that if I want to find somebody out on, you know, if I want to go to somewhere on the net, quite often I will go to Google, I'll type in their name. But if I see that they've got a DNS name that is kind of short and easy to remember, that's what I'm likely to be going to for the repeat business. I mean, the thing is, one other thing to remember about all these problems that we have with people saying, oh, well, I want to have this name and another person's already got it. Well, a lot of the time, that person wants that name not because they really deserve it. They just want that name because they want
they
to be...
They just have more money.
Yeah, they just want to be the only prince.com. You know? So, I mean, sometimes... You know, what I would have liked to see instead of the incredible legal thing that we ended up with Icon and so on and trademarks is simply to declare a sunset, blast open the top-level domain. I mean, heck... The DNS system's flat. .com has got 65-70% of the names. So why not just blow open the top-level domain? We'll just sell Microsoft. No dots, nothing, just Microsoft. And we just have a sunset period of 3 years. You've got 3 years to register your trademark. If you don't do it in that time, well, tough. You've lost it. I wasn't trying to imply that I deserve them. They deserve it. I just don't want to deal with that legal stuff anymore. You know, 3 years of lawyers, and that's it. After that, we put them against the wall and shoot.
So
okay, no, I'm sorry. Google. I'm sorry. Google. I want to answer the Google question.
Google question.
Phil had a great point that initial discovery of a name is good through search engines. I agree with that point. Search engines are an excellent adjunct for developing context for disambiguation. So if you have a name that, and you don't actually know which one you're looking for, having a search engine to like look through those and pull up new information that expands the effective name that allows you to disambiguate, I think that's an excellent way those things can be used.
So you all basically think this is just going to kill off the domain speculators, and that's basically going to be it for this effect?
Let me give you some information I happen to know about the porn industry. It turns out that vanity domain names on the porn industry, unlike vanity names for 800 and 900 service, do not work. This was really quite interesting. 800, 900 special names, like, I'll tell you the two of the ones that are most popular are their dot fuck, or dash F-U-C-K, the last four letters, and dash sex, or spelled different ways, are the two most popular ones. They actually have, you can measure the amount of money they have because the key space on a phone pad is so limited. It turns out that same economics does not apply in DNS. When I learned this, I was surprised. I thought it would just transfer over. It turns out that the dominant way that stuff is, those services are sold on the internet, is through links. And the actual names are effectively computer generated. The actual remembering of the particular domain name does not sell porn nearly as much as having a rich variety of links, perverting search engines and other sorts of techniques does. So in practice, the search engines are going to become more and more important, exactly because the total namespace of the DNS is too large to remember. The vanity names don't actually get you everything you want.
Back to the search engine question for a minute. You're talking about using search engines to find the content you're looking for, or the specific site you're looking for. DNS really is an identification mechanism. You have IP addresses, but those don't cut it for people because we can't remember a string of numbers.
Yeah, let's be clear. DNS has another. So we've talked about discovery. We've talked about disambiguation.
There's
a third one. What DNS is primarily, more than anything else, is an authority system, right? It gives you authoritative data about mappings of names to IP numbers. What it does not give you is authoritative mappings of organizations to domain names or organizations to IP numbers.
Right.
That's what a PKI is. This hasn't come up yet, but I have the deep-seated thesis that the solution of the PKI problem is going to be identical at some level to the solution to the domain name problem, or the larger naming problem. That in fact, these two are essentially isomorphic and will differ only in the way that the stuff is distributed and queried. Let's take the next question.
Yeah, I think that a fundamental question here is where the table sits and who controls the table. While VeriSign would like us to believe that they should control the table, and while Eric would like us to believe that everybody should have their own table, filling the table as we see fit, because I could, for all the sites I visit, for all the addresses I need, I could make my own small house table, and I don't really care about anything else, right? So the issue here is the persuasion technique. Who gets to persuade public to use one global table or each private table? And that's who gets to do it better? That's the issue here.
You know, there's, and the thing is, everyone can have their own table. Right now, with DNS, it's no big deal, but for some reason, nobody wants to make their own table. Everybody wants to get into the global hierarchy, except for a few people. Like I myself use alternative, DNS.
The question was about who owns the data. I mean, in my attitude, everyone should be able to own whatever data they want and convince whoever they want to use to do it. And you're going to end up de facto with a huge stratification in there'll be a small number of people that have a lot of data and a large number of people that have a small amount of data. That's a consequence of economics, not of technology. Whatever you end up with, you're going to end up with something like that. What you want to do when you're making technology decisions is make sure you don't prohibit that distribution of data versus distribution from happening. I mean, let me talk about this in the PKI context, where I really have even stronger beliefs than I do about domain names. I do not send my PGP key out to people unless they tell me they will not put it on a name server, right? I want unpublished public keys. There are excellent reasons for this. PGP key servers with Web of Trust signatures are the world's best traffic analysis information on social networks because they are authenticated and verified through extraordinarily deep ceremony. Okay? It's like the best possible data you can get. Now, it depends on, when you're doing traffic analysis, what the plain text is. Is the plain text you're looking for the fact that I sent a message on February 17th at 5:55 p.m. from the DNA Lounge to my friend in Amsterdam? Is that the plain text you're looking for? Or do you want to know that I know the guy at all? Right? The point about traffic analysis is that there are several billion people in the world, and I only know a few thousand of them. So the connectivity graph on who knows who is extraordinarily sparse. That's the real plain text.
Just to emphasize what Eric, we were having a discussion in the back about Singapore. Oh, sorry, an East Asian country. And one of my friend's brothers actually designed the social network of Singapore as a consulting job. He was working for Mossad at the time. And one of the things they do there is network analysis. Every phone call is logged. And they identify groups of people who are talking to other groups of people. And the point is that it's not even necessarily a question of they go out and beat up people with rubber hoses for talking to the wrong people. You don't even need to do that. All you need to do is to tell people that this is what you're doing. When I was at university, the Conservative Party of Great Britain used to, their student wing used to keep blacklists of all the students who were engaged in left-wing activity. And they used to circulate them, specifically to intimidate people and to stop them from engaging in left-wing activities. It's a chilling effect.
So it was using cryptography left-wing or right-wing?
Well, actually,
I think it's politically agnostic, but anyway. Think about the analogy to porn is interesting. Think about using a radio in your car where you've got, you know, five buttons or eight buttons or however expensive your radio is. You know, I had to rent a car last week because mine was in the shop, and it's like, frankly, I don't remember the frequencies of the stations I listened to, so it wasn't preloaded into the buttons. So you have these meta directories and these other schemes people are using already, like links in the porn world, or you know, things you click on because you see the icon on your screen. So I think we've got other mechanisms that are evolving now. They're not in the protocol stacks, but they don't have to be because everything goes through Internet Explorer, doesn't it?
We have time for about three more questions.
So my question is about the...
sorry, where are you?
I'm back over here in stage... Stage left. If you, it's about the technical evolution of wide area deployed systems. And you commented earlier on how it's difficult to get the next rev of DNS deployed in the network. If you could redeploy DNS from the beginning, how would you change the system to make it easier to evolve?
Let me answer your question partly by telling you how DNS did evolve, right? Which is, I view that there's lots of like detail I'm going to leave out, but there were essentially four steps in the evolution of DNS, arguably five. The first one was the host.txt file. How many of you remember the host.txt file personally, right? Okay, that's surprisingly large. Other places they don't nearly have it. What it was essentially the domain name. It was before domain names. It was the name mapping for the entire internet in a single file that was transmitted around like just manually, originally manually. What happened then was that you had that became technically inefficient. Then what happened is the original domain system was essentially run by John Postel, right, who did a really good job of it. And it was a better way of moving around essentially still global data, right? Then what happened is it got out of John Postel's hands, it got into the NIC, right? And when it moved into the NIC, it kept the same technology but started changing the politics. The fourth stage was when NSI bought the NIC, right? And we all know what happened then. We won't dwell on it. The fifth stage is the ICANN, the current ICANN stuff. The reason I don't call that a fully one, I'm not sure it's different yet, in anything. I mean, it's certainly technically, they've had some technology to do multiple registrars, but I'm not sure it's very much different. Here's the lesson. What happened is that there was a technology that was appropriate to the politics at the time. When the internet was small and there were a few hundred hosts and entries in the host table, like, everyone did trust each other. It was just fine. Then they implemented a technology where a few thousand people could trust each other, which was a different technology. The mistake that happened in the DNS was moving to the NIC without changing the technology and reexamining it. And this is the nasty problem that you get with computer security, is that every small system is secure because no one's paying attention to it. Right? De facto, when there are no threats, it exhibits no insecure behavior. I mean, so the problem we're going to have with, you know, redoing the naming system, I mean, this is a thing that if some alternative is successful, it's going to go through exactly the same process. It's going to be useful and usable by a small group of people with one kind of social interaction, and the technology will spread outside of its appropriate domain. Right? This is why I'm completely in favor that the next thing that needs to be done in terms of naming things is to be able to have a principal architecture that supports multiple resolvers and multiple social groups, and get that thing to spread. Because if you spread that thing, then you can plug in what you actually need to do later. Right? If you try to figure out what the one true way of doing disambiguation in non-unique names, you're going to end up with some problem somewhere, and it's going to cause people problems. If you split the things into a layer of multiple disambiguation techniques and different sorts, and an infrastructure to combine them, then you end up with something that works.
Last two questions.
This might almost be going back into something that was almost a side topic earlier on, but I guess if you're maybe getting away from globally unique names is something that we want to do. I don't really care about that right now, but it seems to me that a lot of the actual trouble in the DNS right now is coming about because of the collision between trademarks and domain names. Should I keep going here? Or?
What's your question?
Okay, so why is it that people who... It seems that if we have databases of trademarks already available, which we do, the whole purpose of a trademark is for there to be registered sections in governments, right? I mean, governments keep track of these things. And if really a lot of the ambiguities come about because you can have multiple trademarks, multiple people can have the same trademark name, either if they're in different product spaces or in different markets or in different geographic locations, then shouldn't it just be that you can make a trademark request? Like, instead of making an HTTP request, you can say, hey, whoever is the authority that provides trademarks in my region, please tell me what the trademarks are that are associated with Amazon. And it could come up and say, well, here's Amazon Pet Supplies and Amazon.com, and these guys do pet supplies, and these guys are an internet bookstore, and here's a link to their web pages, which is all the people who are going through ICANN really care about anyways, is that people can find their web page. I mean, doesn't that just get rid of the whole problem?
Well, the big problem is there's a collision between national trademarks. You've got a problem in that the internet is suddenly brought together into communication and quasi-competition, companies from all over the world. So, you know, somebody who had a unique trademark in their little village suddenly finds that there's somebody on the other side of the world who wants the same domain name. Yes, you can do some of this by issues like CNRP does, where you have the ability to say, I want to look for somebody called Yellow Taxi, who is in Fremont, California. And you can scope by CA, by locality. You can scope by language. But really, you've still got the problem of how do you preload those databases with enough information so that it's useful. Governments don't have that sort of trademark database.
The other thing is trademarks are by usage area. You know, if you made a brand of instant mashed potato, you probably could call it Microsoft, because it's not software, it's not computers, it's not mice, whatever, you know. So, you know, then, I mean, you get the same, you know, so if you go to Microsoft.com, are you looking at mashed potato or are you looking at Microsoft? You know, so you get the same kind of.
If you have a namespace polity which requires uniqueness and is focused on trademarks, those are all my caveats, because I'm going to say something that may sound really weird, then you want basically the authority for those trademarks to be essentially a certificate authority for that data. Okay, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office does, in fact, have all the registrations, all the fields of use. If you've ever applied for a trademark, like I have, you've seen what data you have to provide. It all ends up in the database. The USPTO has that. I would recommend in this particular situation that it would be a really useful thing for the USPTO to take some, in fact, in particular, I think that the little R trademark symbol would do really well to be extended into the character set of the legal DNS and have R.us as a, is it?
Nationalization does it.
Oh, okay. Well, so, all right, then it will work. Phil says, assures me it will work. And there'll be a domain, symbol R.us, that you can register these trademarks under. I'm not sure they're actually going to be unique, but the thing is you can get something that's very close to that system out of the PTO. And the thing is, that's the public keys for the PTO signatures or should be well known. I mean, you might as well just go in, embed them in the browsers, and we'll do it by legislation so you don't have to get cooperation from Microsoft.
Okay, last question.
If there's not another question, then I'm going to respond to the last thing he said there just real quick, which is that, you know, basically, yeah, your solution, it works. If you had a search engine where you could search based on trademark names and it would give you, URLs to the websites, that would let you find things pretty well. I think that's a fine solution, and you should do that. Okay, last question.
Yeah, this is sort of two-part, and I'll keep it very brief. My impression is, from talking to people who've been to the DNSSEC working group meetings, is that a substantial number of large corporate entities are trying to derail and essentially stop the DNSSEC working group from completing its work. So I'd like to hear any comments from the panelists on, you know, the activities of those companies, and I won't name them, but they're pretty obvious.
I'll let Phil not incriminate himself or
right.
his company.
Right, I'm trying not to.
And point out... I say I'm not going to require him to. I'll give him a chance in a second.
I mean, because this is a social layer problem in almost every dimension.
Look, if I dug into DNSSEC last summer, and it's broken in five different ways. I mean, just even to do DNS security in the policy it's supposed to do.
Yeah, but the attack is on the justification for there being a DNSSEC working group.
I know through the same rumor mill that you're using that a lot of the resistance to the actual DNSSEC proposal was purely technical and it couldn't be implemented. Okay, I mean, the other stuff, I can't verify. Now I'm going to hand the microphone to Phil.
Speaking from a large company who's actually trying to deploy, my perception is quite the opposite in that I'm saying, hey, I want to deploy this stuff. You know, I work for a company that deploys PKI, and we happen to run a large fraction of the DNS system. You know, we want to run DNS. We want to be able to sell DNSSEC to our customers. You know, this is not something that there is any rational reason for a capitalist corporation to try and sandbag. We are absolutely not trying to derail DNSSEC. All we are trying to do is to have some very necessary technical changes made that will enable us to actually deploy. And when you're sitting there and you're having people saying, well, oh, I don't see why the DNSSEC should be deployed in .com. And the problem is that the .com domain is too large. You make it smaller and then you can deploy. And I'm sort of like thinking, clearly this person's from a different planet. I mean, like, you know, I've been around the ITF for quite a while, and, you know, in terms of grassroots efforts, which the web was, and, you know, I got people to use that. It's not in my interest to sandbag any technology or any product. Absolutely not.
Right. So, and that's all the news on the conspiracy. The other thing that's going on, DNS is, since DNS has been around a long time, it sort of predates the standards process. So you go to a DNSSEC meeting, and Paul Vixie will be there, who did Bind. And imagine you go to a church meeting, and people are debating the Bible, and then Jesus gets up in the back of the room and tells you what it really meant when he wrote it. I mean, it's this kind of a thing. So the IETF is quite broken in a lot of ways, but the DNS process, the whole thing about standardizing that, is a very sort of dysfunctional family side of that. You have the DNS, you have DNS sitting in one area when it's not got security people looking at it and trying to worry about it, and so there's a whole bunch of process issues about how that's going. And so, for example, there's this thing around that there's this rumor that ISPs will never deploy DNSSEC because it makes the packets bigger than 512 bytes, and their routers will never forward those, so you never get any DNS traffic will ever go through the internet. And it's these things like this that are just sort of folklore kind of things, and that's people are trying to unwind that sort of one battle at a time. You know, they can't sign the comm zone; it's physically not possible in the universe, which I doubt is true. I mean, I suspect he can buy enough toys to do it.
Well, yeah, you can buy enough toys, but the problem is that you got something that's having difficulty scaling, and it's growing at 50% a year. That, you know, kind of you want to avoid putting in protocols that don't scale, you know? And if there's a technical fix, I mean, what happened when we bought Network Solutions is we had a look at DNSSEC because our CEO had said that we were going to deploy it. And you do, you know, you do a security review. And one of the things that we found was that deploying it had this enormous cost implication. We looked at alternative ways of doing it, and we worked out a way of reducing the cost of deployments very significantly without affecting the security. Now, we're all security guys, and, you know, we've done a pretty rigorous security analysis on that. I get rather annoyed when I go to a working group that says, oh, we don't want to make this change because we're scared, because it's security, you know? You know, if it's a group that is meant to be doing a security thing, they should have security people there who can say, this is a change that matters, this is a change that doesn't matter. You know, it's the getting through the layer of the folklore. And opt-in does not change the security of DNS one iota. It does reduce the cost of deployment.
All right, so I think that's all the time we have for our panel. I'd like to thank Phil and Rodney and Eric. And here is Bram.
Hey, everyone. Thank you all for coming. This has turned out better than I could possibly have hoped. And you've been a wonderful audience throughout the entire thing. And I'd like a round of applause for all of our staff and speakers. None of the staff and speakers for this were paid. They were all volunteers. All the money for CodeCon came from attendance fees and from a grant, which was very generously given by Linux Fund, and this has gone off great anyway, and I haven't lost my shirt on it. and this is so wonderful. I'm definitely doing more of them again in the future. I'd particularly like to thank Len here, who did quite a bit of the organizing for the whole thing. And DNA Lounge has been great, and their staff has been great to work with. And I'm definitely going to do more of these, and I'll be announcing those when I am. And I'll be announcing them, by the way. No one else will be announcing any future CodeCon events. And thank you all very much. Yeah, okay, and now it is time to go. Thank you all for coming.